The Darling River and Menindee Lakes are in crisis. We are working hard to bring out and share the personal lived stories and facts surrounding the problem to the people of Australia and around the world. We aim to do this in plain language that everyone can understand. You are listening to The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling, a radio series interviewing real people living along the Barwon-Darling River system in western New South Wales, outback Australia. The interviews in this series were recorded in April and May 2018, and please stay tuned.
Tolney Post Station is located south of Pooncarie. It's one of the westernmost homesteads in New South Wales and is positioned on the bank of the Darling River. Rachel Strawn, her husband and family grow citrus grapes and fodder crops on their irrigated family property. Earthling Studios caught up with Rachel Strawn to discuss the critical state of the Darling River and how that is impacting on their future. Hi, well, I'm here speaking with Rachel on the beautiful green-blue algae-coloured Darling River, halfway between Pooncarie and Wentworth. And I'd like to ask you, Rachel, how has the over-allocation of water on the Darling River and the water trading affected you here on your station?
It's affected us severely in that we just don't have the inflows that come into Menindee like they historically did. So we started growing citrus here on Tolney Point back in the early 40s. All our farm records here show that from 1943 till 2003, we had a constant supply of water and never any interruptions to it at all. So it's really impacted our ability to grow citrus and wine grapes because we need water 12 months of the year, which historically we always had access to water, but now it's making it completely unviable for us to even continue the produce that we've always grown.
So what do you think the future holds for you here with the Darling River running by for your working property?
Well, we're fighting really hard for our security supply to be restored. If we have enough water, the river's actually quite healthy here and we can have good in-stream health, connected rivers all the way from Menindee right through to Wentworth. And it's critical, this area, in not only in us for industry, but it's one of the most pristine sites for native fish in Australia as well. And it's quite isolated, so it's really protected from being overfished. And a lot of the fish scientists rave about how amazing it is, like the cod populations and the native yellow belly population, how healthy it is or was in this section, and we're all very concerned that that's going to just disappear.
Have you noticed any other impacts on wildlife that are dependent on the river in your locality here?
When the river's dry, it's not only the fish that don't have a habitat, but like we've also got kangaroos, emus, echidnas. Historically, we used to have wombats here that disappeared in 2003. We haven't sighted them again since then, since it went dry. So we're finding that a lot of those native species are migrating away, obviously, so that they can preserve themselves as well.
Rachel, have you heard about a second pipeline that's going to be proposed to go from the Murray River up to Pooncarie in the future?
We'd prefer to see a healthy river here and not any pipeline needed at all. So it's hard when people say, is a pipeline a good idea? And it's like, well, if the government's going to completely rape the river the way that they have and have policy that just doesn't encourage it, the local environment here or any industry on the Lower Darling, that's their only solution, is to build a man-made pipe, and it's crazy.
Would you rather have seen the money spent for the pipeline to Broken Hill, the Panic pipeline, spent on restoration of free-flowing rivers along the Darling?
I don't know whether it actually needed a lot of money to be spent on it. It needs to have a government with a will to actually want to do what they said they did. When the basin plan was first developed, they said that it was to protect the environment, have increased a healthier river system with healthier in-stream flows, connectivity, all these catch cries that us as the community lapped up and said, well, we want a healthier environment, and that leads to healthier communities, and that they have to have the will to actually have the policies in place that you don't have opportunistic cropping of irrigation, taking those very first initial small flows. I think they've just lost control with the big guys and the pressures that they're putting on them to actually have annual cropping on a very opportunistic river system like the Barwon Darling. And it's really impacted all of us downstream that we used to just poke along with a small amount of irrigation. But the river was always a connected river and we always had water here. Now that they're taking more and more upstream of Menindee and upstream of Bourke, it's just not sustainable.
Do you believe that the Murray-Darling Basin Authority has failed the communities along the Lower Darling?
They completely ignored it. And I don't understand how they can have a Murray-Darling Basin plan when they're treating the Northern Basin basically, as far as they seem to be concerned, it finishes at Bourke. And there's a whole section from Bourke to Wentworth that's been completely forgotten about. And it's a critical womb of the basin. It's isolated, it's pristine, it has amazing hatcheries of fish and whatnot, and the events that come down, like in 2009, that had massive silver perch and golden perch events. Like, it's critical to have this river healthy and producing that.
You sound like you have a great passion for the river and living here on the river. How has the current situation impacted on your family's health and well-being?
It's been really hard, especially for the kids. Like, we've had, especially when they start to hear that it's going dry again, they worry that they've got water just for their horses, and is my horse or my dog's going to die because we've got no water? They, in their heads, when you're eight or 10 years old, it's really scary, that thought that, well, water sustains life, and they get it, and they know. And the stresses that it puts on us trying to even deal with, like, we've had to pull out trees and like citrus trees and that, because we just didn't have enough water to sustain all of them. They're big, big decisions, and it takes a lot of extra work when the river does cease to flow, because you're constantly just chasing that water source to try and keep things still going.
Is there a possibility that you might lose your water licence?
I don't think we'll lose our water licence, but it's actually having access to water. It's not much good having a water licence and you don't have access to water 12 months of the year, 365 days of the year. With citrus and wine grapes, we can't be without water for 2 months. Like, if they turn off the river in December, we're about to pick a wine grape crop in February. If we don't water for that 1 month, we don't have a crop, so we can't sustain our farm at all. And this has been a generational farm that is basically what the Lower Darling is. It's all generational farms. There's no corporate farmers along this area. I think that's probably one of our biggest weaknesses, because the corporates seem to have that big pull and that ability to lobby, whereas family farms, we more want to protect the local environment, have a healthy community and a healthy local economy, great spot for our kids to grow up, that it's, we don't really like to be out there in the media. It's not in our nature to whinge all the time, and we just want to get on with farming and making it an amazing area for our kids to grow up in.
Yes, I understand that.
Yeah, in 2012 they changed the water resource sharing plans, that now an A-class licence, it's an unlimited pump size. They can store the water, they can carry it over. There's all these things that have increased the ability to extract even more water, supposedly on a regulated river that it should always be flowing. But.
And when the river's flowing, the people are flowing.
They are.
And I hope that your farm can flow on to your children and remain viable.
Oh, and that's our dream. Like, driving in today, you would have seen what an oasis it is here. And we're really proud of what we've achieved. We don't use a lot of water like they do in some of the big irrigation flood areas up in the Northern Basin and that, but we're very sustainable and really enjoy being part of our local community and supporting the economic area of Pooncarry and the Sunraysia area.
So to continue being viable, would you think it's about time there was a federal royal commission into over-allocation of water and water trading in the Northern Basin?
I think that's part of it, but they have to go deeper into the changes that have been made to policy that have actually had third-party impacts. We've basically had our environment killed, we've had our local economy killed, and so, yeah, socially, economically and environmentally, they've completely failed in this area. And it's really, really cruel what they're doing here. They need to look at the policies and rectify. When they actually see it going wrong, fix it. At the moment, they see it going wrong and then they make more decisions that seem to push it further and further down the wrong course.
It's almost like they're wanting to see the death of the system.
Yeah, I can't even contemplate that because, yeah, we're hoping that we're getting somewhere and that we can actually get government to start listening and see how critical it is that they start to step up and want to protect and actually enhance the environment and the local economies down here.
Well, hold on to your faith, Rachel.
You are listening to The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling, a radio series interviewing real people living along the Barwon-Darling River system in western New South Wales, outback Australia. The interviews in this series were recorded in April and May 2018, and please stay tuned.
Okay, Rachel, you might remember we talked before about this, and I just recall being at the Pooncarry Hall that day when there was about 100 people there. There was delegates from New South Wales Water. Do you think there's time to maybe get a little bit more boisterous about this?
Probably so, but it's not in our character, and I don't really want to lower myself to be as rude and disrespectful as what the government seemed to be to this area. With that day, we had 15 high-level bureaucrats from both the MDBA, Water New South Wales, Department of Industries, and they couldn't answer any of our questions when we posed a lot of questions about our future here on the Lower Darling. They refused to answer, and it was just a lot of government spin that would probably sound really great in Sydney or Canberra, but we didn't buy it at all. And when you were talking about how polite everyone was, I had a phone call that night after the meeting from one of the farmers who was quiet, and he said, I come out of that meeting, I was so mad at myself, he said, I should have got up and said, right, we've had your meeting now. You can sit down there and listen to us because we're going to have our meeting and tell you exactly how it is. And he didn't, and it was really sad to see it affect generational farmers who feel you've been to our community and they're just the friendly, loving bunch you want to get on with farming and having a great place for their families to grow up in and make a dollar for the local community. It's I don't think we'll ever get aggressive. It's just we can't, not us at all.
You can still be strong, can't you?
Yeah, and we have a lot to say, and we continually put in submissions to all their inquiries that they have. We try to be heard as much as we can, but at the end of the day, it's I'm not sure whether we're just beating our heads against the wall, but we can't give up. There's no way of giving up now.
There's a lot of anger in communities all down this river. What about court action?
I think the last decade has taken so much out of us. We nearly don't have the energy to do that now. We're doing what we can and within the means that we still have to run our farms, and that's a 7-day-a-week job in itself without having to take on the full-time position of just continually fighting a battle that I've been fighting this since 2003. It wears you down. There's only so much you can give, and there's times where I've just got to say, I can't even talk about water for a month. We rely on it, but like you just have to completely draw away every now and then because it's just so overwhelming, and it's really disheartening that how they're treating us out here. It's just completely disrespectful of everything that we have, and we take for granted that we've got such a beautiful environment and that here that it rips your heart out that what they're doing to the river.
the Waitangi River in New Zealand has been granted legal rights under the law as an entity, as a living entity. And this is developed by the Earth Laws movement around the planet, where ecosystems are recognized as living entities and given protection and rights under the law. Do you think that the Darling River catchment or the Darling River Basin could benefit from being protected as a living entity?
If the basin plan did what it intended to do, we wouldn't need to go down that track. If they improved in-stream health and maintained connectivity in the rivers and actually had a priority of basic health of the river system, there'll be a few lucky swamps that get watered here and there, but you have to have the base health of the river, and I think the plan has gone away from that. It's up to the federal government and the Murray-Darling Basin Authority to rein themselves back in and instead of looking at small outcomes, have major outcomes that we treat it as one river system, that we do have the northern Bowen-Darling, which is, connects into the lower Darling, and you've got the Murray. Like, it's all one river system that is dependent on a basic health, and if we don't have that basic health, we have nothing. So it wouldn't matter what laws are there. It'd probably take 20 years in a court, and we don't have 20 years. We're going to have a dead Darling before that happens.
The mayor of Broken Hill, who's a career health worker, community health worker, seems to understand very clearly that with an unhealthy river, you get an unhealthy community, and that costs everybody. Yeah. I mean, Wilcannia and Menindee are on their knees, mm-hmm. and they're depressed. They're broken. They're oppressed by this state government who seems to just say, oh, well, we can take that river and sell it for money, and you guys can just rot. Can you see that by improving the river flows, that would improve community health all along the river?
Oh, community and individual health. Like, when we have a running river here and a healthy river, at the moment we've got blue-green algae that we're fighting and we're trying to water stock, but also try and find sections of the river where it is a bit healthier that we can water them. And it's just, at the moment, we're constantly either fighting against government, water quality. It's all these issues that aren't necessary. If we just had a basic, healthy river there, we can, it just leads, and it leads to happy people. We have fishermen and campers come up. At Easter, we had a lot of campers who just refused to come because they said, well, we can't have the kids swimming in blue-green algae water. So it's other ongoing things. It's not just about the family farm and that. It's about a whole lifestyle for a lot of town people who don't get out bush. And I wouldn't bring my children up on a camping trip to an unhealthy environment. So it's just critical that what they've created is just a monster. And
what about taking it to the United Nations as a human rights issue? Access to fresh water is a human rights issue, and the United Nations could be involved in this. What do you think of that?
I fight a little fight, but I'm hoping that there's some bigger players out there who understand those systems more.
What would be your message to the suburbs of the East Coast about this? What would be your message, your take-home message for them?
That we just need a healthy river system, and I think that's what the Australian community, New South Wales taxpayers and that should all be expecting, that the Murray-Darling Basin Plan actually delivers healthy rivers. And at the moment, they're killing the womb of the Murray-Darling system. And I'd be really upset if I was a city person basically funding the death of a river.
Thanks, Rachel.
This is The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling. Interviews with real people affected by ever-diminishing flows along Australia's iconic Darling River. The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling, is produced by Earthling Studios at Grassy Head, New South Wales. Executive producer, Mark Merritt. Field coordinators and technical assistance by Susie Peake and Kath Eaglesham. Interviews by Mark Merritt and Kath Eaglesham. Voice overs by Sally Hook. Please write to us with your feedback. Post Office Box 30, Stewart's Point, New South Wales, 2441.
The Darling is dying, please take my word.
To find out more about issues and matters related to the Darling River, go to the Vanishing River website, www.thevanishingriver.com.au.